Magia, vida, sonho, viva, é preciso acreditar.
I'm Ella Harp, and you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh. Hi, it's Tori DeVito. In every family, small conversations can make a big impact. Like when my dad shared his experiences as an alcoholic.
Your honesty about that part of your life gave me a sense of integrity that I wanted to uphold in my own life.
I wanted you to know from someone who's been in recovery more than 30 years now that hard work is what creates success, not alcohol or other drugs. I said it a lot, and I'm glad you took it to heart.
Talk. They hear you. For more information, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
One parent, the green tree frog, Hylocenaria, has this call.
To this very special edition of the Don Lemon Show, Lemon Live. It's not live at 5, we're live at 10:30. Well, 10:45, close enough. We're so happy that you could be here. We have some big breaking news to talk about. You see some folks there on your screen, and we're happy to have both of them. Patrick Akulikan is here. He is the editor-in-chief of Minnesota Reformer. I am interested to hear everything Minnesota to see what they have to say. But first, we must speak with the Lieutenant Governor of Pennsylvania, Austin Davis. Thank you very much for joining us, both of you gentlemen. So, Lieutenant Governor, to you first. If you had asked me a couple days ago, and this is what I said, and I intended to put this out on social media, but the vice president beat me to it this morning. If you had asked me a couple days ago, I would say that Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania, your governor, had it in the bag. But apparently that was not the case. And I believed even as of maybe 2 days ago that it would be Tim Walz, because young people like him, progressives like him, in a way you get the Israel-Gaza situation off the table. He came up with the whole weird thing, which really resonated. He's a very effective communicator, and social media loves him as well, cable news as well. What do you think about this choice? Because I'm sure you would have thought that it would be Josh Shapiro, perhaps.
Well, you know, what we have said all along is the choice of a running mate is a deeply personal decision that's left up to Vice President Harris as she kind of molds her ticket and, quite frankly, the government that she wants to lead. And it's important for her to have the person that she feels that she can best work with. And she made that decision, right? I think the fact that Josh Shapiro has made it to be a top contender is a testament to the great work that he and our administration has been doing here in Pennsylvania to deliver good results for working class people here. So, you know, ultimately she made her decision. We look forward and stand ready to support the Harris-Walz ticket through November to make sure that not only do they win Pennsylvania, but we win this election.
But Lieutenant Governor, you're right. The Harris-Walz ticket will need Pennsylvania. Obviously it is a very consequential state. You need Pennsylvania. You cannot win the election without Pennsylvania. Do you think that this hurts the vice president's chances, the Harris-Walz ticket's chances of winning Pennsylvania?
You know, what I think is the most important thing is not necessarily, you know, who the vice presidential candidate pick is. I think it's more important the vision that Vice President Harris lays out for the country, how she's going to help elevate working class families, how she's going to help bring down costs to create an economy that works for everyone, how she's going to make our community safer. And I think that's what people want to hear from presidential candidates, how they're going to make their lives better, how they're going to impact families like mine. I'm the proud son of a union bus driver and a hairdresser, how they're going to help folks get ahead and create an America where everyone has the opportunity to live the American dream. And so I think she has 90 days to lay out her vision. I think by the end of this campaign, people are going to see that the contrast is clear between a vision of moving America forward and a vision from Donald Trump, who wants to, quite frankly, take us backwards. And I think ultimately they're going to decide that Kamala Harris is the right person for the job.
Have you had a chance to speak with Governor Shapiro?
You know, I've spoken to the governor a number of times throughout this process. He and I often speak regularly. So I have had a number of opportunities to talk to him. But I will say this, the conversations that the governor and I have are private, and we're going to keep them private.
Well, I'm just wondering if you've had a chance to speak with him since this all happened. That's it.
Yeah, I've had a number of opportunities to speak with the governor.
Okay, without giving away personal, is he disappointed? Is he on board? Is he, you know, that's not giving away the substance.
Well, as I said, every conversation the governor and I have are private, and they're going to remain that way.
Okay. So let's just say overall, do you think Pennsylvania is on board with this choice and helping to move the Harris-Walz ticket forward?
Yeah, I do think. I think Pennsylvania Democrats are on board. I think, as I said, we know this election is going to be close, particularly here in Pennsylvania. The last presidential election was decided by less than half, less than a percentage point. And we believe this race is going to be equally as close. But we are committed to doing the work. We've opened a record number of field offices across the state to help elect Vice President Harris and now Governor Walz. And so we're ready to do the work. Folks are going to be on the ground. We're going to be on the doors, and we're ready to do everything we need to do to deliver a victory for the Harris campaign.
You know, I do have to say that, and I'm sure that you remember this, during COVID, during George Floyd, you know, I spoke with Governor Shapiro. He was not the governor then. He was the attorney general. I spoke with him numerous times. He is sharp as a tack on cable, just on television. He is very liked in Pennsylvania, very smart, charismatic. Both my female and male viewers thought he was handsome. He would have been, he is a good choice, would have been a good choice. I think both men would be a good choice for the vice president, but she went with the person I think she thought would deliver best for her. Do you disagree with that?
You know, look, I can't get into the mindset of the vice president as she went through her process and what she weighted one way or another. But ultimately, I think she made the decision that she thinks does two things. One, helps her win, and two, is the person that she wants to govern with. So I think, you know, I respect her decision, and I think everyone ought to respect that decision and get on board to help move the camp forward on to victory.
That's actually a very good answer, because I am watching the folks, you can't see it, but the folks who are in the chat, because the show is live and it is airing on YouTube and other streaming and social sites. And they're saying, hey, get on board. Both gentlemen are good. Someone said, I even wanted her to pick Kelly, but I am happy with Walz. I would have been happy with Shapiro. So I think she was, is it fair to say, kind of an embarrassment of riches?
What do you mean, like that she just had too many great options?
Where she had three, she had actually more than three great options, I think. Yeah. She had a number of great options.
Yeah, look, I think it's a testament to the deep bench that the Democratic Party has of capable, charismatic leaders who are doing great work in their states and their respective communities. And so I think we are lucky to be living at a time where we have such a deep bench of Democrats who are going to contribute mightily, not just to the national conversation, but locally as well. And so I think it's an exciting time to be a Democrat.
Yeah. Listen, I don't know if you want to respond to this, but you know, I mean, you are in the political world. You have been out there. Sort of the criticism that progressives have lobbied toward the governor there, talking about college writings. He even responded to it. This is him on his college writings just a couple of days ago. Can we play that, please? Okay, perhaps we don't have it. Okay, he was surprised. He said he was surprised that he was being asked about something that was more than 20 years ago when he was in college. My response was, I can't even remember what I said or did on Wednesday, but for something that happens when you write something in college, people change and they evolve. Do you think the criticism that's been levied at him, you think it's fair?
Yeah, look, I think the criticism comes with the spotlight in a lot of regards. And I think you're absolutely right. I'm 35 years old. The governor is 50 years old. The things that we did at 20 are very different than the people we are now. And I think most people recognize that people grow and evolve and change. But I will say this, Josh Shapiro won a landslide election in Pennsylvania to be governor. He has a over 60% approval rating for his work as governor here in Pennsylvania. And so I think, quite frankly, all the criticism that has been levied against him, voters in Pennsylvania don't necessarily agree with that criticism. And he's won three elections here statewide.
Yeah, amen. So how are voters? Have you had a chance to speak to any voters regarding what happened? I'm sure they're happy for the ticket, but I'm sure they're disappointed that their governor was not the pick.
Yeah, look, I as I've traveled around the state, people are happy that Josh Shapiro is going to continue to be their governor, right? People like the work that we've been doing. They're supportive of the work that we're doing. And I think folks are happy that we're going to continue doing that good work here in Pennsylvania.
Where do you plan to be today for the rally?
I'm going to be at the rally. I'm going to be in Philadelphia at the Lycarius Center supporting the Harris-Walz ticket.
Yeah. And what do you think the mood is going to be like? Do you think people are going to be positive about it? Or are they going to be, oh my gosh, why didn't you pick our guy?
No, I think people are going to be excited to rally around the Harris-Walz ticket. And I think it's going to be, there's going to be great energy in the room. I think there's going to be like 10,000 people that show up. And I think it's going to be an exciting rally. And I think people are going to come out of there ready to move forward and ready to elect Kamala Harris as our next president.
We're honored to have you on the program, Lieutenant Governor Austin Davis. Is there anything else that you want to say to our subscribers before? Because I know you have a very busy schedule. You got to get ready for the rally. I'm sure you got to get your talking points together. You got to talk to some people. Perhaps you're going to call the governor or he's going to call you and you guys are going to coordinate.
Well, the governor and I talk all the time. But I would just say it's critical that folks come together, rally around the Harris-Walz ticket, and we defeat Donald Trump in November.
Lieutenant Governor Austin Davis, thank you. I really appreciate it. As I said, I know you're busy, so we'll see you soon, and perhaps we'll have you back, after the rally this evening. That would be great if you could. But thank you for your time, okay? I really appreciate it.
Take care.
Take care. So, Patrick Kulikin, the reason I had you wait, one, the Lieutenant Governor only had a short amount of time, but also, you are a reporter. And so I want you to respond to what you have just heard, because you're in Minnesota. I got to tell you, a meteoric rise, at least when it comes to vice presidential picks, because a couple of days ago I said, it's got to be Tim Walz. It's got to be Tim Walz, even though it's a long shot. Look at what he's done with the messaging and weird and on and on. But it still is a bit surprising. Am I wrong?
No, I don't think you're wrong at all. And I think that the reality is that outside of the political junkie bubble that we're in, I think very few Americans have any idea who Tim Walz is. And so I would say this is the riskier pick if you're just looking at the electoral calculation. Shapiro certainly gives you an advantage in Pennsylvania, and I think Pennsylvania is considered the hinge state. So I'm actually surprised. But when I go back to the years I've been covering Tim Walz pretty intensely since 2017, you always knew that he had this fascinating biography and he was a great retail politician. So I think that I'm not surprised that he took advantage of this moment.
Yeah. Look, when I first saw him, of course I knew who Tim Walz was after, all of my years in cable news. And I knew that he was sharp, but I didn't know that he was that quick, especially when it comes to messaging. And I didn't know that he had that connection with young progressives, even though I don't think that he legislates from a particularly progressive stance. I think that he is somewhat centrist. Some of his things are progressive when you look at what he wants to do, making sure that kids have school lunches in public schools, etc. But I don't think that he's particularly progressive. Do you?
Well, he came into office as definitely the second choice of the progressives in the party in 2018. He did not win. Here in Minnesota, we have this kind of strange endorsement process. He did not win at the convention, the Democratic convention. He wound up winning in a primary, and he was seen as the more centrist of the two Democrats. What did change, however, in 2023, after he was reelected in 2022, and on his coattails, there were narrow Democratic majorities in both chambers of the legislature, and they did pass a long wish list of progressive policy items, not just the school lunch. I mean, they legalized marijuana. They did a carbon-free mandate by 2040. They raised taxes for housing and transportation. They enacted a large child tax credit. They expanded the working family tax credit. So it was a long list of a progressive wish list, and whether or not he was the guy driving that, and he wasn't necessarily. I mean, I would give credit to the legislature for those moves. He did sign those bills, and he certainly is enjoying some of the fruits of that work in 2023 right now.
Yeah. Listen, this is the interview, I believe, that sort of catapulted him to the top of the list, or at least for people to think about him as a potential vice presidential pick for the Vice President Kamala Harris. Right now, Twitter is over the moon about Walter, already making meme videos like this one. Watch this.
We believe in a brighter future that makes room for all Americans. We believe in a future where every person has the opportunity not just to get by, but to get ahead. And we are not going back.
Back. 9-9 is a good time. Who the fuck are you? I'm a brat when I'm bumping that. No, I wanna hit my track. Are you bumping that? Till the windows crack, I'll be bumping that. No, I'll never go home. Don't sleep, don't eat. Just do it on repeat. Keep. I'm in the club, yeah, I'm 365 party girl. Should we do a little pee? Should we have a little line when I'm doing a little while? When I'm meet me in the bathroom with you. 365 party girl. French manicure, whipple with a recipe. I look hot when I'm. No, I really don't stop when I'm. Gonna jump when it drops when I'm down 999 right, cool. Is a good time.
We get it. So they love him. That's what I said. The young people look. Is he that popular in his state with young people?
Well, I think his popularity has risen considerably in just the past 2-3 weeks. But I think you have to remember that he doesn't come from a traditional political background. He was a geography teacher for 20 years. And so he, you know, he was a guy who was almost in a way, if you think of a great charismatic teacher, he was on stage every
day. Was he
day.
A football coach as well?
He was also the defensive coordinator for Mankato West, and they won a state title, which is a huge deal here. So this is somebody who, and he was in the National Guard for 24 years. And this is, he just loves people. He's from a small town in Nebraska. He comes here with his wife, and he's, you know, Minnesotans are very proud of Minnesota. And I've lived all over the country. I don't think I've quite experienced it like this. And he has the pride of a convert. He's somebody who moved here, and he just loves the place. His first year in office as a governor, 2019, he spent, I think, all 10 days at the state fair. And you know, because the state fair is a huge deal here, and there's a rivalry with Iowa, and but you know, you're going to see there's the record attendance is 100,000, and he just loves that kind of retail politics and being around people and talking about how great Minnesota is, and so he has that skill as a retail politician that you just. You have to be sort of born with, but also I think developed over decades, not just in politics, but also in the classroom.
Yeah. Look, when I first saw him do what he did in regards to when he started appearing more and more on cable news, I was like, wow, you know what? This guy's actually pretty good on television, and shaping a message is really important, for the campaign. So, there's one more thing that I want to play of him, and this is him on Twitter. This is the one from Political Players, if you can play this. It's him with his daughter at the state fair. Since Mr. Kulikin has been talking about the state fair, we want to play this. Here it is.
Governor Walz here out at the state fair with my daughter.
Ho.
Every year we as a family do something old and something new. I get to pick something, a classic, the old mill ride, to do that. And then Hope gets to pick something new.
I think we're going to go do the slingshot.
Which I don't know what it is, and they're keeping it from me. But then we're going to go get some food, corn dog.
I'm vegetarian.
Turkey then.
And turkey's then, meat.
Not in Minnesota, turkey special. And we will go do some of those things and report back.
Minnesota, it's worth it.
Wow, that is wild.
That was pretty cool.
That is wild.
Awesome. That would be good.
It was okay. It was so worth it. Good call.
It was good.
Thanks for talking me into it.
You're welcome.
I mean, come on. You have to relate to that. I did that. Someone talked me into doing that once at a fair, and I screamed like a baby with colic. I just was, I could not handle it. I don't know how he was able to, you know, just smile his way through it. But that's very relatable. Who wouldn't like that? I like the guy.
Patrick. Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's a Midwestern dad. And again, you know, that experience in the classroom and going to their...
Someone said in the chat, Big Joe Grizzly said, check the Springsteen shirt.
Yeah. But he can wear it authentically. You know, it's like, it's a thing with all these like white guy politicians that you gotta like Springsteen, but like, I actually think he probably actually, you know, listens, he likes Springsteen authentically. And you're going to see lots of this. And I think that was ultimately that ability to communicate with average Americans is ultimately, and it's some kind of chemistry that the vice president had with him in the interviews, I presume. And he's a guy who can make a great first impression. And so that chemistry and then his ability to connect with people, again, I would say they're going to have to get the word out, because his name recognition nationally is probably, I'm sure it's less than 10%. So for all of these new fans he has on Twitter, I think it's just worth remembering that, you know, even in Wisconsin, where he's the governor of the neighboring state, I'm sure, you know, a lot of people have no idea who he is.
Yeah. But isn't that kind of, I think that's a positive. I think that he's new and people don't know who he is, because he gets to introduce himself. He gets to create a narrative around himself. He gets to create the person, the character, whatever it is, the image that people want to see without really many influencing factors from the past.
Yeah. And so Republicans will try to define him and do so from here. And they'll say that he's over, you know, I mean, they're going to show photos, I think, and video of Minneapolis burning after the murder of George Floyd. And they're going to talk about school test scores like all over the country that we've struggled here in the wake of the pandemic. So Republicans will try to define him. I do think he's probably going to get, you know, they're going to get just, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of earned media. As you say, he's good on cable and he's good on TV. And so they're going to try to get this image of Tim Walz out that the internet left has fallen in love with the last 2 weeks. They're going to try to get it out to the whole country, and especially those blue wall states.
Do you think it's a positive for them, maybe a blessing in disguise, that they have this sort of condensed timeline? Excuse me, that it offers them, perhaps it is more powerful and less, maybe it's more concentrated than, more potent rather, than having sort of this long timeline for people to dig into your past and to make more mistakes and so on. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's worked to her advantage already, in part because, as you say, that long campaign and the way that long campaign has often played out, and you know this well, is that some of the opposition research will bubble up in the right-wing media. And then it sort of floats over into the mainstream. But all of that process takes a long time. And so I think that they're probably playing catch up right now. Not to say there aren't oppo books on Tim Walz, but they've got to figure out what's best and then get those stories out there. And I think the compressed timeline, it is working to the Democrats' advantage right now.
Yeah. But honestly, though, listen, you can talk about, you know, what happened after COVID and about, you know, what happened to education and what have you. But it happened to a lot of places. And there are places where I'm from, a place where I'm from, Louisiana, and states that I've lived in that had not so good rates when it comes to education and literacy and all of that before the pandemic. So you can always find something. But the fact that he is so well liked in a Midwestern state, which is the same thing that they're touting about J.D. Vance. So wouldn't there be some hypocrisy in there to say, you know, oh, he's not qualified. He's a whatever, this or that. It's kind of similar to J.D. Vance as well.
Well, also, as the governor of Minnesota, he can point to all of these quality of life measures where Minnesota is often leading or in the top five, like life expectancy, certainly our schools. We have this, some really bad racial opportunity gaps, but we do have some of the best schools, depending on where you live. We have a very textured, diverse economy, an excellent healthcare system. The Mayo Clinic is here. We have a number of Fortune 500 headquarters are here. We have the best park system in the country in St. Paul and Minneapolis. I think that Minnesota is a place that other places often aspire to. And he's going to be able to be he's the best salesman for Minnesota and for what he has achieved here and what really a half century of progressive governance has achieved here.
Yeah. So talk to me about him and his family and, well, not even though you spoke a little bit about that, but what do you think happens next? Obviously they have the rally today and then it's going to be a nationwide tour with them. What do you see as a seasoned reporter happening?
Well, he's very good at this, and I think he'll be fine. As you mentioned, his family, there's a couple interesting little nuggets here. His wife, Gwen, is a very strong, powerful figure in her own right. She's a lifelong educator. They struggled to have children, and they had to rely on IVF to do so. And he's got this great line about how he says that it's not by chance that our daughter, our oldest daughter, is named Hope. And so I think that was another sort of kismet moment of this campaign, that IVF has become such a bad issue for Republicans. And here you have a guy whose family is due to IVF. They're just kind of like the all-American Midwestern family. And I think you saw that clip from when they're at the state fair. And he's got a teenage son. It'll be an interesting introduction to the American public. But the bottom line is he's just sort of a likable guy. Mm-hmm. And that's something that Republicans are going to have to try to puncture.
Yeah. What did I want to ask you? Oh, have you had a chance to read? What is the headline? What is a Minnesota Reformer? What are the papers saying there now? If you had a front cover and you could write a headline, what is that going to be when the paper comes out? Maybe perhaps with a special edition.
Minnesota.
Even though the paper is always living now, it's online. It's not like people wait extra, right?
Minnesota media is sort of famous or infamous for being thirsty for national attention and local angles on national stories. So it's going to be quite overwhelming here with Wall's coverage. But my lead, my headline was plucked from obscurity, because that's the reality. I mean, I still think the American public doesn't know who Tim Walz is. They don't know much about him. And so the Walz and Harris have some work to do to introduce him. I think if they can get him in front of Americans through that retail campaigning environment, they're probably going to like what they see.
Let's see. What else do we have? So can we put up, this is the tweet from Harris. From the Vice President Harris of the official announcement. By the way, I think she changed her wallpaper, which is, the thing behind her, the big blue thing. And now it says Harris Walz. I am proud to announce that we have asked Tim Walz to be my running mate as a governor, a coach, a teacher, a veteran. He has delivered for working families like his. It's great to have him on the team. Now it's, I'm reading from the actual small little thing. Now let's go to work, join us. And then it's Harris Walz. Pretty simple and really supportive. I think that if you look at what has happened with Vice President Kamala Harris and her campaign, I mean, it's been pretty well run almost to perfection. You know, if you're looking at it in the vein of a political campaign, especially this late in the game, being able to have the whole Democratic Party coalesce around her. And then now this pick, I don't know, people would say, is it hers to lose? Is it theirs to lose at this point?
I still think it's probably more, it's a toss up. because of the Electoral College advantage that the Trump campaign has. I think you're right that it does seem that the handoff from Biden to Harris really was flawless, and they've managed to take advantage of this quick timeline. They've avoided major mistakes, and so I think the Democrats were on their way to losing, and now I think it's much more of a toss-up.
Yeah, it's really shocking. What has it been? Has it been 2 weeks? Has it been about 2 weeks, right, since she's been?
Yeah,
it was crazy because I said after the debate, I was like, I don't know. I think it's going to be a Trump presidency. And then after the shooting, I was like, oh, well, he won. And then all of a sudden, just like that, you never know. Fortunes change. What do you think?
That's true. Yeah. Going back to Biden stepping aside, I think potentially an important player here is former Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who, at least was reported in the D.C. press, she was backing Walz and whipping for him. I think organized labor were also behind this pick. So even though Walz, we feel like he's come out of nowhere, there were some strong institutional forces behind him. Remember, he did serve in Congress for 12 years, and he was not just some random backbencher. I mean, he was a guy who obviously Pelosi, she relied on as a Democrat who held that seat in a pretty conservative district that went for Trump twice.
I'm looking at some political analysis. My friend Bakari Sellers, who is very intimate with all this, says some people on X think it's a great pick. Some people think it's a bad pick. That's my analysis. Is that, do you think that's fair to say? I mean, I actually think it's a really smart pick. Look, I really do like Josh Shapiro. I also like Mark Kelly as well. And as I said, and there was Pete Buttigieg who was possibly there, and a number of other people. Andy Beshear. I think that she had, there was an embarrassment of riches because she had a number of people that were quite frankly really good picks and could have been good vice presidents. But quite honestly, I got to be honest with you, I think that this Tim Walz pick is actually really, really, really smart.
Yeah, I mean, the old saw is that people don't vote based on the vice president.
I think this time makes a difference.
And we'll see whether that plays out or not. And I think not going with the governor of Pennsylvania when you need to win Pennsylvania, it makes it seem like a risky pick. But at the same time, I think she is trying to convey a certain vibe. And that's what she achieves here with Walz, that this is a regular guy from working class background. He's a teacher and a coach and a member and in the National Guard. And he can talk to average people like a normal person. And he's not weird, to use his word. I'm guessing that she also just has good chemistry with him personally.
Let me ask you this, Patrick. Do you think that, how much did let's just be honest, how much did Israel play into this? How much did Shapiro's stance, what he's written about Israel, what he has said about Israel, do you think that was a factor? And does that take it off the table now? Does
well,
it help
I don't, in that situation? Yeah, I mean, I don't really know. I mean, nobody has convincingly explained to me how Walz's position or any of the candidates' position on Israel is different than Josh Shapiro. And I do fear that there was sort of an undercurrent of anti-Semitism in some of what when people were saying that somehow Walz would be a better choice if you're a backer of Palestine. But that was certainly the perception. Somehow Shapiro was going to be worse on the Israel-Gaza issue. And so the other thing to keep in mind here is that if you were to lean away from Israel, you would be disappointing and upsetting a huge and important segment of the Democratic base. I'm not really sure. You know, I certainly have no insight into her decision making, but I don't necessarily think that Walz is considerably different than Shapiro on the issue. I don't think we even know.
You heard the lieutenant governor on a while ago saying that Pennsylvania was on board. Do you think people are going to be disappointed? You think it's going to turn some folks off? It has the potential of turning people in Pennsylvania off because they wanted it to be Josh Shapiro. Maybe they just said, look, we love having him as our governor. Great. He's not going to be vice president. I don't know.
I think people, Democrats, as has been shown the last 2.5 weeks now, are so excited about having a fresh ticket and one that can prevent a second Trump presidency, that I'm sure there's some disappointment today. There's going to be for a few more days. But I think when all is said and done, folks will be on board. The question is, can Walz, you know, can he really play well in Scranton and in Western Pennsylvania?
Of course. I think he can,
because that's really, they have to at least hold their margins and then run up the score in Philly and Pittsburgh. But you got to win Pennsylvania. So that's why I think that this Walz pick was a considered risk, but a risk.
Do you think that the question is, you don't think it hurts him in Pennsylvania? You don't think it matters in Pennsylvania?
Well, no. I mean, having Shapiro on the ticket, I'm sure it would have given them a significant boost. But they must be confident in their standing there.
Does it help? Do you think it's going to be awkward with Pennsylvania today? And I expect to see, because the lieutenant governor said he's going to be there, I expect to see Josh Shapiro at this rally. And I'm sure you'll see unified and, you know, hands going up with the three of them, right? Holding hands, and we're supportive and we're on board and what have you. Will people buy it? Do you think everyone's going to play nice, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that Governor Shapiro, he's a shrewd guy. He understands that if he were to somehow undermine the ticket, this would not redound well back on him. Mm-hmm. And so I expect that, sure, there's got to be disappointment, but he's going to give a stem winder today, I bet, himself.
This is his moment, even though he's not going to be on the ticket. This is his moment to shine, you think?
Yeah, I mean,
he's great at it. You're right. I didn't think of that. You're so smart, Patrick.
what a great team player he is, and there's going to be a big, there's going to be a lot of lights and cameras on him. And so it's a huge opportunity for him, because who knows what's going to happen this fall? And then you've got 2028.
Yeah. Listen, I've worked in Philadelphia for a while and was a local reporter and anchor there. And I think no one pageantry like that, especially when it comes to America, no one does it better than Philadelphia. You got the Liberty Bell. There's going to be a big flag. And you know what I mean? It's going to be, the original one of the colonies and one of the capital. It's going to be great, to watch that. I want to ask you something, though. Because I've had people in the chat and our subscribers, people who watch, say, you know what? J.D. Vance is not even liked in Ohio. That's what they're saying. I don't know if that's true. Do you think that after this pick that J.D. Vance remains on the ticket with Donald Trump?
Well, I don't even know the mechanics of getting kicked off the ticket. But I think that they're smart enough to know that it – If they tried to do something like that, it would be a big mess. I mean, it'd be bad news, several bad news cycles.
Especially you're going to drop a Midwest guy because of another Midwest. Ooh, that's not going to play well, would it?
No.
Kyoko is in the chat saying to you, Patrick Kulikin. Kyoko says, I'm sure J.D. Vance is not liked in Ohio. Others are saying J.D. Vance, yeah. I'm from Ohio, and J.D. Vance is not liked here. But, you know, go on. I'm sorry.
Well, he ran behind the Republican ticket in 2022. You know, it's not surprising that people would say that because, you know, it's become a pretty thoroughly Republican state, and he won a fairly narrow victory, all things considered. So, I mean, I think it's fair to say that. And then, you know, he's not, he's a provocative guy who, and so I can certainly imagine that his numbers are not great in Ohio.
Yeah. I just put in the chat any questions for Patrick Kulikin, our guest, because this is we talk to our viewers here, but most of them say, hey, we're not going back. Let's see. We like Shapiro, but they like Waltz as well. Someone said, will Waltz do good for crypto? Sheila Stewart says that. I don't think that's something that you can answer,
no.
Right?
Yeah, I don't know. Tom Emmer, the majority whip of the U.S. House, the congressman from here, he's the crypto king of Congress. But I don't think that Walls is your man if you're into crypto. No.
How are people feeling there about the economy and about the prospects in general in Minnesota? If you can, before Walls, but about a Democratic ticket, about Kamala Harris.
I think that there has been a surge of excitement here. In the last 2 weeks, like a lot of other places, I think there was concern that we could get a repeat of 2016 when Donald Trump lost here by 44,000 votes. This is the closest they'd come to turning Minnesota red in a long time, and that they would lose the Minnesota State House and lose a lot of the progress they've made in the legislature the last few years. And that's just completely turned around. And obviously with this Walls pick, Minnesota is not a battleground at all. And I think they're probably hoping they're going to get some coattails and have a good election here. This is kind of an important breeding ground for Democratic activists and operatives and elected officials. The chair of the party here is the chair of the National Democratic Committee chairs. Walls is actually the chair of the Democratic Governors Association. You know, we've just produced a lot of Democratic talent, and I think that so people here are extremely enthusiastic about this selection.
Well, I got to say to you, Patrick Kulikin, you're a very good guest, and I hope that you will come back because I love having guests that inform our viewers and the electorate, because we are really going to need that going into November, and that is the mission of this show. So thank you. Did you get to say everything that you wanted to say? Is there anything that I didn't get to that you think that our subscribers and viewers would like to know or hear?
No, just go to MinnesotaReformer.com and you can check out our coverage.
MinnesotaReformer.com. Check out the coverage while you're there. Make sure to pay particular attention to Patrick Kulikin. Patrick, thank you so much for joining, and we'll have you back real soon, okay? If there are any developments, let us know. And what was your headline? What was the headline for your story?
It's Walls.
Now we have more information from other folks out there about the recent pick for vice president on the Democratic side.
Minnesota, we respect our neighbors and their personal choices that they make. Even if we wouldn't make the same choice for ourselves, there's a golden rule. Mind your own damn business.
A lot of people like that rule. That's Governor Tim Walz talking about reproductive rights and other issues in his first big speech as running mate to Vice President Kamala Harris. Her choice is getting applause from the political center, including independent Senator Joe Manchin, and from the left by Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She joins us now only on CBS Mornings, and we're glad to have you here.
Of course, thanks
for
having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. Let's talk about the rave reviews that Governor Walz seems to be getting from all spectrums of your party. You've got Nancy Pelosi on one side, Joe Manchin. We have the progressives on the left. What does this mean? What does this say? It's been a long time since we've seen this kind of reaction.
Yeah, well, I think first and foremost, it says that Governor Walz is a uniter. that Vice President Harris is picking a uniter for not just the Democratic Party, but for the entire United States, and that this selection of a ticket between Vice President Harris and Governor Walz is that we are seeing every American, rural America, suburban America, urban America, regardless of identity, that we want to see your interests, and we want to make sure that the things that are most important to you, putting food on the table, lowering rent and mortgages, that we see the needs of everyday Americans, and we're going to fight and see them in Washington.
But already the Republicans are saying, you've heard this, he's a screaming liberal, progressive. You know, people hear the word Congresswoman progressive, mm-hmm. and it's like, ah, it's very scary to yeah. a lot of people. What does it mean to you, without talking points, in a sentence, what it means to you? And do you think your support helps or hurts the ticket at this particular time? It's certainly in the middle of the country.
Yeah, well, I think progressive means the following. Most Americans believe that money in politics has an outsized role in what happens in government. And to me, being a progressive means putting the needs of working families ahead of the needs of profit and of special interests and corporations. And so that translates into what we see in Governor Walz and the priorities of Vice President Harris, like expanding health care, universal school lunches, things that we care about when we're packing lunch in the morning and picking up our kids at home. And so to me, that is what progressive means. It's putting the needs of everyday people ahead of the needs of special interests in Washington.
So let me ask you about the other candidates that were potentially in the running to be her choice for vice president, including Governor Josh Shapiro. There are some who are suggesting that the reason why the vice president didn't pick Governor Shapiro is because of anti-Semitism. Mm. And I did see Chuck Schumer clap back at one Republican or person who's on the right, suggesting that Democrats are anti-Semitic. And Chuck Schumer, obviously, at the very top of power in the Democratic Party mm-hmm. as far as the Senate is concerned.
Yeah, I mean, we have Chuck Schumer, who is an incredible leader in the United States Senate. Vice President Harris is married to Doug Emhoff, who has been a profoundly a wonderful figure, who is also Jewish. I think it has nothing to do with that. Vice President Harris had a very challenging, she had a challenge before in that we have so much talent in the Democratic Party, from Governor Shapiro to Governor Walz to many other people that she had to consider. I think that Governor Walz has many different assets that he brings to the table, and I trust her decision in making one that is best for not just the Democratic Party, but again, the entire country.
There is no mention of the war in Israel and Gaza right now. Do you think that was deliberate? Do you mm-hmm. think that that should have been mentioned or come up in some way?
Well, you know, I think that this is certainly an issue that's important to many Americans. They're going to want to ensure that we continue our efforts towards a ceasefire in the region. And I'm sure that this discussion will come up certainly between now and November. But we also have a wide scope of issues as well that she has to address. And I think we saw a lot of that addressed last night, including when Governor Walz was addressing issues like IVF and choice, as well as many other issues that are at the top of people's minds right now.
I want to turn to Representative Cori Bush, mm-hmm. who's part of that progressive wing known as the Squad. She lost her race yesterday, and so did Jamal Bowman here in New York. And both of them talked openly about their dissatisfaction with the war in mm-hmm. Israel and Gaza against Hamas. What do you think that says about the Squad and sort of the state of where you all are? Because you had so much support a few years ago, and sort of as Gail pointed out, there's this question about where that party stands, which seemed to have a lot of influence and power early on in the Biden administration.
Well, first, I just want to speak to how courageously Representatives Bowman and Bush have served in Congress. And they spoke courageously on issues that are often very difficult to talk about in mainstream politics.
Right.
And I think that is one of the reasons why they have earned so much support, because they're willing to put their careers on the line to advocate for the issues that they think and viewpoints that they think are right. What I do think it means is that there is an enormous amount of influence of big money in politics. Cori Bush's race was the second most expensive primary in American history. Jamal Bowman's race was the most expensive primary in American history. And all of that money was spent against them by a big money system of super PACs and difficult to trace political contributions. That, to me, speaks to the corrupting role of our current campaign finance system and the fact that it is very hard to be a working-class American that gets elected to office and stay in office. And to me, I think that those defeats speak to the more urgent need for us to continue to advocate on these issues. And I do continue to believe that they represent many of the views of many Americans as well.
Congresswoman, I want to really quickly ask you about this Truth Social post from the former president of the United States, Donald Trump. And in it, he suggests that this is unconstitutional, what's happening with the vice president. He uses derogatory language to name the vice president and the former president, Barack Obama. Do voters in the Democratic Party who are not following the mainstream media or who are not on Truth Social or attending or watching former President Trump's rally understand this is the kind of language that is circulating on Truth Social, for example?
You know, first of all, there aren't a lot of Americans on Truth Social, to your point. And so I do believe that when the president deploys, or when the former President Trump deploys his most extreme rhetoric, he is doing it in very contained spaces to a very defined audience that is almost primed for some of this most extreme rhetoric. And when he's deploying this kind of extremist rhetoric, he's not doing it in broad channels that most Americans can see. He's doing it on Truth Social. He's doing it in these smaller rallies where I think some of the most rabid and extremist elements that we see really get riled up. And so I don't think a lot of people are aware of the extent to which, whether it's his rhetoric in which he's using derogatory terms about Vice President Harris, to the finer policy details of Project 2025, where he's talking about eliminating, and the Republican Party is talking about eliminating the Department of Education on a federal level, which is what allows us to be able to try to even the playing field for kids in rural communities and urban communities alike.
Because she didn't have a lot of time, her gut, her sort of immediate chemistry with Tim Walz was a key factor in her ultimate decision making. And obviously, they go through all of the key criteria. You want somebody who's going to be a good governing partner, we were told, somebody who is going to be loyal to you, somebody who's going to have your back, somebody who shares many of your values and vision and agenda. But overall, this was something that seemed to come down to the way that they were able to spend a little bit of time together on Sunday and the conversation that they had. And ultimately, Vice President Harris felt that this was someone who she really could build a trusting relationship with, and that this was somebody who wanted to talk about getting access to more rights and freedoms for middle-class families, who she really enjoyed the fact that he is a former high school football coach, a veteran, a gun owner, a hunter, somebody who really has focused on areas that are kind of a complement and contrast to her own experience. And ultimately, I was told, Anna, you have to think about this as, is this somebody that I want to sit down and have lunch with every week for 4 years? Is that the kind of person? And ultimately, for the vice president, Governor Walz was that individual.
And who was her close inner circle? Who was she relying on through this process?
We know that there was a compressed timeline for the vetting, but there were a couple of people who were brought in to do a little bit more of that and to really consult with her as they went through and whittled down the list of candidates. And that includes people who were in the cabinet before, like Marty Walsh. That includes people like Cedric Richmond, who had been a co-chair for the Biden campaign, who is now working with the Harris campaign, and Senator Catherine Cortez Masto of Nevada. So these are people who bring different perspectives from their experience, from their past lives, who were also really key in drilling down on some of the key potential drawbacks or vulnerabilities of some of the candidates, we're told as well. And they had to really do this in the span of a couple of days. They had to do this in these really small meetings that were behind closed doors. But ultimately, the decision was up to Vice President Harris. She said she wanted to kind of sleep on it to solidify what she felt was right, again, in her gut. But she said that really this decision for her was an easy one based on the chemistry and connection she had with Tim Walz. Anna.
Well, Monica, thank you for the reporting. And Dan, you've been covering Harris for a long time. What do you make of her decision-making process in choosing a running mate? Does this sound like her usual MO?
You know, she looks like the person I knew in California. You know, she's out there smiling. She's having a good time. And, you know, when I look at Governor Waltz, I don't know him. Most Americans don't. He looks like big grins, big smiles. He's having a good time. Seems to me familiar to the Kamala Harris I know.
And so is it different, though, than the one you've been seeing since her time in California?
Well, I think her, I haven't been covering her as a vice president, but the impression I have from reading and watching her on television is it's been at times rocky as vice president, much less so the last 2 years. But sure, she's under a national spotlight. It's different than a spotlight in California, although we certainly pay attention to politics out here. It's different in Washington.
I want to know more about the Kamala Harris you know, having studied her when she was there in California. She's held a lot of high-profile roles, from San Francisco District Attorney to California Attorney General to Senator, now Vice President. But the polls show a lot of voters still don't feel like they know her well. Why do you think that's the case?
Well, I'm not sure that people especially knew Mike Pence or Al Gore when they were vice presidents. Vice presidents are secondary roles. I do think that Californians have a sense of her. I think they understand that she's a smart person, quick on her feet, has a set of core values. This is not somebody who, just fell out of a coconut tree.
Which she likes to lean into, that meme that you just referenced. You say she's been underestimated throughout her career. You write in the LA Times, "I saw firsthand what kind of candidate she can be. Tough, formidable, disciplined. Without a doubt, Republicans should wish they had stopped her when they had their best chance." What's been key to her successful campaigns in the past?
Well, when she ran for district attorney and when she ran for California Attorney General this first time in 2010, she was running scared. She was an underdog. She was running. Her opponent in 2010, which is the race I really paid most attention to, was the district attorney of Los Angeles, had 40 years of courtroom experience, a really experienced, very good candidate. And on election night, it was so close that he even declared victory. Well, it didn't turn out that way. She ended up winning by 70,000 votes. But national Republicans went after her. It was they knew that if she won that first race statewide, that she was going to be who knows what she was going to run for, governor, senator, president. They wanted to stop her before she rose to that first statewide post as attorney general. And they spent a lot of money trying to do it, over $1 million back when $1 million meant something. And they almost beat her, but they didn't. And this was 2010, so that was really a red wave election.
All very interesting. And you talk about money. She's proven to be a formidable fundraiser, at least so far in this campaign. She just raised another $20 million, we heard, after her announcement yesterday with Tim Walz being chosen as her running mate. Dan Morain, thank you for providing your insights. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Tomorrow's a huge day for the Kamala Harris campaign. The vice president is expected to name her running mate before she begins a barnstorming tour of battleground states on Tuesday. Harris and her new vice presidential pick are scheduled to be in Phoenix on Friday. Yesterday, the vice president met with three of the top contenders. A source close to discussions tells NBC News there are more meetings scheduled today, with the announcement coming tomorrow. Multiple sources close to the campaign tell NBC News that Harris's running mate will make their debut at a rally in Philadelphia tomorrow, and that the announcement most likely will come in a text that's sent to high-ranking Democrats, which is the same way they did it when the President Biden picked Harris.
Now, some local high-profile Republicans are calling on voters to make Kamala Harris the next president of the United States for a simple reason. She's not Donald Trump.
12 News journalist Troy Lynch went to their event to see why they aren't voting for their own nominee.
One of the biggest reasons I'm voting for Kamala Harris and I would have voted for Joe Biden is that they are not Donald Trump.
Not every Arizona Republican is voting red for the next president.
We are here to send a clear message. Arizonans are rejecting Donald Trump and his failed leadership.
Notable Grand Canyon State Republicans like Mesa Mayor John Giles, former State Rep Robin Shaw, and former Scottsdale Mayor Sam Campana all giving their endorsement to Kamala Harris rather than former President Donald Trump. It's a path that can be fraught. Republicans around the country have come out against the former president, dealing with primary opponent, negative ads, and even death threats. Sam Campana believes speaking out is worth the risk.
Another Trump term with J.D. Vance would be far worse and would lead our country down a path that I don't think we could ever recover from.
Mayor Giles believes that Harris will advocate for middle-class Americans, make sure billionaires pay their share of taxes, and secure the southern border.
I know that she will work with, in good faith with Republicans in Congress to address a congressional legislative fix to our broken border and immigration system.
Shaw says she voted for Trump in the past.
Looking back, I regret that vote.
The three questioning the former president's character and ethics, calling on Republicans to choose country over party and truth over lies.
Those experiences shaped my vision for a better Arizona, one that priorities around environmental stewardship, cultural enrichment, and strong community values.
We reached out to the Arizona GOP, who's expressed their support for Trump, but we did not hear back. For 12 News, I'm Troy Lynch.
Hey, out there in Radio Land, you are listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 on your FM radio, WRCT.org, on your web browsing device of choice, preferably one with speakers. But, you know, you do you. Anyway, it's 7 o'clock, you're listening to Consolidation. It is time for the radio calendar, where I tell you that you can stop by the Pittsburgh Banjo Club's regular rehearsal every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Founded in 1988, the Pittsburgh Banjo Club is an all-volunteer band and organization that uses banjos, trumpets, tubas, and bass to perform popular music from the 1920s and 1930s. The Pittsburgh Banjo Club rehearses at the Allegheny Elks Lodge number 339, which is located at 400 Cedar Avenue in Pittsburgh's North Side. Food and refreshments are available. You will need to make a reservation, though. Reservations must be made by Tuesday at 5 p.m. for each Wednesday event. You can do that by giving them a call, 412-321-1834 is the number for that. Other live music that you can go watch tonight at Stage AE. You can catch Iration, Pepper, Denim and Article Sound System. Doom Scroll will be at the Roboto Project along with Frog Legs, Bedtime Revenge, and Crisp Lake. Club Cafe is hosting Bella's Bar Talk along with Murphy Lawless and the Most Wanted. Goodness, good pronunciation night already. They're also playing with the Polka Maniacs 4. Hans Williams will be at the Thunderbird. On Thursday, the Indestructible Sextet, featuring Roger Humphreys, will be at Con Alma. Primus, Coheed and Cambria, and Puddle's Pity Party will all be at Stage AE. Slag Mountain is playing at Shenley Plaza. Kindhearted Strangers are playing at the Club Cafe, along with Raised by Giants and Mike Blackhurst and Wolf 8. Government Center is hosting Watermelon along with Dumplings and Missing. The Rebirth Brass Band will be at the Pittsburgh Winery. The Juliana Theory will be at Spirit Hall along with the Unlikely Candidates. Bastardane will be at Thunderbird along with Otto. Let's see. On Friday, Lindsey Stirling will be at Stage A, along with Walk Off the Earth and Audrix. Mr. Smalls is hosting Summer's Finale, featuring 446, Griffin Handshake, Neon Vanadium, a band called Porters, and a band called No Sleep for Zombies. I apologize to everyone whose names I'm going to mess up. There's going to be a lot. At the Funhouse at Mr. Smalls, you can catch Mixtape Madness number 6. It's the solo edition featuring Ann Eliza, Casey Catone, Morgan Arena, Nick Gerkert, Caleb Kopta, Liz McBride, Reliable